Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
I hate this laptop so much. Right, okay, yeah, click on the little car.
And then it should be like your microphone.
Yeah.
Have we got the right one?
Yeah, hold on. The USB audio.
Okay, is that any better?
That's much better.
Cool,
that's
right, there you go.
Cool. Right, almost slick now doing this. But in the past, Beck, that would have taken an hour. And I'd have to do it to both of them.
So rude.
Yeah. No, it's fair enough, though. Lots for fuck's sake, I am doing it. I am doing it.
And John getting more and more irate and just shaking his head.
And now, for our more grateful podcast. Welcome, listener. You have come of your own free will to the appointed place. Ross, James, and their companions have ventured beyond this sceptred isle to find the hidden, the wicked, and the truly horrific. The film is over. The review begins. It is time to keep your appointment with the General Witchfinder. Folk in
Welcome to the first episode of the General Witchfinders spin-off podcast, Folk in Hell. I'm James in Bournemouth in Southern England.
I'm Ross in Dorchester in Southern England. And today we're joined by a special guest.
Yeah, and I'm Becca, also in Dorchester in Southern England, taking great care to read exactly the writing that Ross has written down for me for the script.
Well, that's very strange for
and
the
And I'm Ross's not, wife.
Do not deviate from the script.
Do not deviate from the script.
Well, at least you're looking at it. Our usual third presenter. Presenters? What are we? Podcasters? Never looks at this. Ever.
Yeah.
I got text today again. So we should do awarded to the curious. And I
said, We've done it.
Yeah. I don't know.
I think we should point out for people, Ross, that the thing is that John is a very successful artist. And as a result of this, he is going to be having an exhibition at the end of this month on at a gallery in Cardiff. So he is someone, because he's a one-man band and he's working alone, he is way more time pressured than you and I.
Yeah. We have 9-to-5 jobs.
Yes. For all intents and purposes, yes. So we felt that, like, we enjoy doing this. So just to give John a bit of a breather, and then I don't know, maybe people tune in just to hear John.
Yeah. Then we'll find it. We will see that by the numbers.
So very quickly by the numbers. Yeah. So this is, we decided just to give John a bit of a break and maybe to do some stuff which is beyond the normal general Witchfinders remit for people. And then we can also have amazing, great special guests in, like Becca, for this time. So, and then, you know, we can just keep the show fresh,
yeah,
as they say. It may all go disastrously wrong.
Yeah, just allows us to get some content out so you don't have to wait
months
in between stuff going out. So basically, we are going to be taking this opportunity to watch horror from all around the world, hopefully with a bit of a folk horror kind of feel to it. But as usual listeners to the podcast will know, John is always teasing me about all the weird shit I watch. which he would never ever watch, and as I often make my wife watch this weird shit movie as well, we thought it was a good opportunity to have her on the podcast for the inaugural episode.
Hurrah!
Huzzah!
Cool. So Beck, this is where it says we intro the guests and welcome them to the podcast and let you plug stuff.
I don't have stuff to plug.
I was about to say, what do you want to plug?
No,
but what are your horror credentials then, Beck?
Horror credentials. You see, this is always a tricky one because I think whenever I say I like horror, I think people are quite keen to want to understand kind of what genre within that. But actually, I just like horror content. I don't mind how it looks. I'll try anything, really. But I've liked horror films ever since. Ooh, I don't know. Ever since I hid behind the sofa when I watched something on Words and Pictures. And afterwards was like, I need to see that again. That really freaked me out. Yeah, I like all kind of horror films, to be honest. But if it's you're more of a creeping dread kind of guy, right, Ross?
Yep.
whereas I do like your kind of traditional guy in a mask sort of film. If it's got a mask, I'm pretty definitely going to watch that.
Yeah.
I'm going to watch the hell out of that.
And you like a bit of sci-fi as well, don't you? Like horror and
space. I love a sci-fi horror.
So I picked a creeping dread film for us to watch tonight with nothing to do with space.
But before we do that, before we get into that, Ross, Becca, I've never asked you. Do you really love Jason X? Then the Jason horror movie when they're in space.
Yeah, I automatically 100% love that because it's Jason. I'm not going to deny that there are many plot holes in that film.
I can imagine. I've never seen it.
And it's not one I've revisited. Well, I have seen it, but I didn't rush back. But, you know, I accept it in the fold the same way that I accept and love Prometheus, which I realise is not everybody's favourite part of the whole alien journey. But
that crunching noise was me and James both biting our tongues at that point.
I like the idea that Ross thinks that he actually would bite his tongue. Ross would just moan really loudly through a film that I like Prometheus, or just refuse to ever watch it again with me. There's no biting of tongues, Ross, not at all.
Why would I watch that again? There's a whole world of movies to watch, you know. Well, I've watched it twice. You know, that is how much I love you.
Fair play. Yeah. Fair play.
All right. So, should we done that? Talked to her. Just, we can move on. So this time in Folk and Hell, we covered The Innocents,
not the 1961 film with Deborah Kerr, which we will be covering in the Mothership show at some point. George Clinton and the Mothership won't be involved, unfortunately, which is a far more comprehensive Wikipedia article than the sparsely covered film that we did watch. Hence Ross adding this in the short paragraph to bulk out the introduction a little. Rather, we are talking about The Innocents, or The Uskuldige.
Well done.
A 2021 Norwegian supernatural thriller film directed by Eskil Vogt. Four children become friends during the summer holidays, and out of sight of the adults, they discover they have hidden powers. While exploring their newfound abilities in the nearby forests and playgrounds, their innocent play takes a dark turn, and strange things begin to happen. Leslie Felprin of The Hollywood Reporter called the film low-tech, high-tension, writing that the lonely and uncanny and sometimes unthinkingly violent world of childhood is explored with chilling candor and exceptional skill.
Jessica Kyang of Variety praised the performances of the child actors as well as the film's atmosphere, calling the film both a satisfying genre exercise and a minute observation of the processes by which young children acquire morality.
Cool.
Phew. So there. So there we have it, yes.
So normally I'd put a trailer in here, but then I realised the trailer's in Norwegian.
Norwegian.
So yeah. Unless we got, we probably have got some Norwegian listeners, but it's not the majority of the people. So I don't know what I'm going to do at this point. It might be just a bit of music playing now, and then we will come in.
Er det nye?
Ja.
Skal jeg vise deg noe?
Ok.
Hvem er det du snakker med?
Jeg snakker med noen som ikke er her.
Hold den opp.
Well, usually on General Witchfinders, we tend to cover things which are extremely old and are so well established in culture. It doesn't really hurt to go over them, the plot minutiae, point by point. So therefore, we're probably going to do it slightly differently this time out, but there will be spoilers. So if you haven't seen this film yet, and I highly recommend that you do.
Oh, that's a good start.
Absolutely. Yeah, I would just say, you know, kind of buyer beware. If this is something that you're absolutely unfamiliar with at this moment, like I was, go and watch it and then come back and listen to this.
So you hadn't heard anything about this film at all?
Nothing. Not a thing.
How about you, Beck? Did you come into this with any expectations?
Into the film?
Yes.
Just to clarify.
Yeah.
or life, or
this relationship.
This relationship. Yeah, exactly. Just wondered. None at all, because I had only half paid attention to what you told me I was going to watch. Okay. And therefore, was literally asking you what it was as we were sitting down to watch it, which actually is quite... I watch a lot of films like that generally, and it's good because I don't know about you guys, but sometimes I might get myself into like a mindset of like, this is going to be shit, and I'm not going to like it.
I seem to remember a film called VHS, which I tried to get you to watch once back, which I turned, just seeing the title, you said, this is dog shit. And then
that is not true. I did say this is dog shit, but I said it when it became apparent that it was quite early in the film.
Yeah, so
I stand by that, to be fair. Yeah,
I think I turned it off in the right half.
Yeah, I have got a low bar, right, when it comes to film quality. I do have standards. They're low, but they are there. And this one actually dipped below that. So,
VHS, or The Innocents?
I've got to tell you. VHS.
Yeah.
Not The Innocents. The Innocents I had no kind of concept of before we watched it.
Cool. Well, I saw it basically someone put the trailer on Twitter and I thought, that looks amazing. It's right up my street. Maybe I need to create a whole new podcast in order to get someone else to watch this with me. So, and it seemed folky, and I think maybe we can talk about as we're going in.
Mm.
Do you think this class is folk horror?
No.
I know. They're in the woods.
What class is this folk horror? Is that like a defined genre?
I think it's becoming more and more defined now. I think it's really? That whole thing of, yeah. I think that long documentary that Ross and I watched, it was all about it, did a really good job of describing it, which is that you are uncovering something from the past, that there is, especially for this country, that there is a hidden and dark past underneath you all the time, and that you're never far away from falling back into this kind of unenlightened time, and that the kind of the dark ways are always just there, and you can uncover them so easily, and we can fall back into those old ways so easily, and that's the fear and that's the worry. And then on this big documentary, they then said, however, it's different in different countries, depending on both their geography and their history. And they explained how they said, like, you know, films set in America, it's never kind of, oh, you know, they uncover something in a house. It's always, it's what's out there in the distance because it's so big. Mm-hmm. And it's always, you know, the fear is somewhere out there beyond what you can see, out there in the darkness. Whereas for folk horror in this country, it's what's underneath our feet. So I didn't feel... But this was that in
I don't know
that criteria.
Because I would say that one of the things I liked about this film is you never realized, you never knew why any of this was happening. And it felt to me like it had something to do with the place.
Yes.
So for me,
really?
I felt like...
I'm intrigued by that, Ross. What do you mean?
That the two girls who... So basically, the film starts with a new family moving to a new location, which like 99% of every modern horror film starts with people moving to a new house or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, which is, you know, it's just a good way of kicking off a story. But they are moving out to these apartment buildings, which seem to be like strangely kind of in the middle of a forest. It's like a high rise sort of you know, like what you would call in the America the projects, but like sort of stuck in the middle of a forest, mm. which is I felt was quite it was quite intriguing. But I don't know anything about Norway, so
because I just thought it was like the suburbs,
right?
That was like the Norwegian suburbs, and just the nature of it, because that's what I thought. Even though it's supposed to be like the tower blocks, it still looked really nice.
Yes, it did look lovely.
Yes, very chic.
Yeah.
It is. And then, you know, it's just they've built back out into the country. You know, that's as far back as the suburbs have gone. Sure. And then beyond that, you've got, the countryside.
But the implication, I felt like, it's like these kids who had gone there had never experienced anything like this until they went to this place. And it kind of felt like that them all being there caused, for example. Mm. But maybe let's talk about the story, then we can talk about what actually happened. So... we start off with the girls moving out there, and it's basically two sisters. There's Ida, who's, I think, the main protagonist of the story, and Anna, who is her severely autistic sister, who is in the back of the car with her, and you hear her sort of like repetitive, sort of non-language noises.
Non-verbal voices
before you actually see her. And it's an interesting sort of like relationship between them already, because you see that the younger sister just really pinch her sister as hard as she can on the leg. And there's no reaction. The girl just carries on just making that noise. And you start to kind of get this, but she looks so innocent, this Ida, a little blonde haired girl, but there's that nastiness straight away already in
with there. The opening, because as I said, I knew nothing about it. So I had a feeling, oh, there's probably going to be something a bit dark, you know, going on here or what have you. But the thing that struck me straight away was it reminded me of the start of The Babadook.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
And it's got that whole kind of vibe of, you know, having to deal with a child that's got a disability and a child that's got a problem, and how that is kind of a thing, a motif in and of itself. And for me, immediately what struck me, especially like with the pinching, is like the whole thing here of, you know, kids can be nasty, and I'm sure we may talk about it again at some point, but as I was watching it, the thing that kept coming up for me over and over again was this just totally reminded me of the Jamie Bulger murder from the 1990s, and how in this country, in Britain anyway, I'm always saying this with an eye to people from abroad listening, is that it was a case wherein two boys who were like nine and ten, abducted, tortured, and murdered a toddler.
Mm.
And at the time, it was seen as such an outrageous thing. And I think it really sort of permeated through British culture. And there was a lot of sort of soul searching that went on. Obviously, there was a bit of a folk panic. People tried to blame it on video nasties because it was still like the late 80s, at this point, sort of 89, kind of 90 time. But still, that whole thing of, can children, and you know, the nature nurture, are children born evil? You know, how nasty can kids get? Mm-hmm. That is absolutely what started striking me as we were watching this. And I thought, oh, okay, I wasn't expecting it to be like this. But just from that initial observation and that setting up of the scene in the car, I thought, oh, okay, this is
a little bit of nastiness.
This is going to be different.
Straight away, so, isn't there?
Oh, yeah, totally, totally. And throughout.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Yeah. And I think even just that little bit there was them setting up that was not the first time that had happened. That was a little casual thing, the checking that mum was looking and doing it, and then just double checking. She's done that before. It wasn't the first time that she did that.
Yeah.
And that was straight out of the gate, like, oh, okay, we're going here. This is a kid that's, got that element, pulling the wings off flies, mm-hmm. you know, that kind of behavior. But she's doing it sort of straight up with an unaware or a seemingly unaware sister. That was quite a bold move, I thought.
My first thought was, is that girl really autistic? Because it seemed really realistic straight off.
And then I was thinking, she's a brilliant actress.
Yeah, and I was thinking, really how are they getting away with pinching her?
You know, yeah, no, that was outrageously good. Yeah, I thought. So clever.
Mm. So they move into this new apartment block and they're immediately told that everyone's on holiday. So it had that very strange thing where you're in a place where lots of people live, but it's almost abandoned, which was it gave it quite a nice sort of creepy sort of vibe to it. Mm-hmm. And this shared something which with one of my favorite horror films, which I'm sure we're going to do in this spin-off, is Midsommar. The whole thing's in the sunshine, in the daytime.
And
you're not relying on the dark, you know, spooky.
Apart from one sequence when they flicked it into the darkness later on, which was the most horror-y bit.
Which I felt like that was a cop-out, personally.
Really?
Yeah. It felt to me like Stranger Things. I felt like it, but it's kind of like, I felt like it was like relying on something they didn't need to go with.
Okay.
But so when they get there, the parents are busy, and it's a lot of the time you're seeing things from a child's sort of height, child's point of view. You're not seeing adults' faces. You're seeing them sort of just moving around, busy, not paying attention to the kids, which was good. And then she kind of just goes outside to have a wander around. That's where she meets another one of the main characters, Sam. I don't know. It's written as Ben.
Is his name Sam or is his name Benjamin?
It's Ben. It's Ben. I've written Sam and I've written Ben two different times.
Oh,
it's Ben. Yeah, there we go. I have problems with, like, if people got three letters in their name, I get them all mixed up. It's true. If you're a Tim, Tom, Ben, Sam, Ian, you're the same person to me.
Ian?
Yeah. Ian's one word, three-letter word.
Yeah, it is. Anyway, okay, go on, carry on.
I see the world in shapes, not sounds and things. So, yeah.
That's just in a true general Witchfinders aside, that's always something that I found really, really weird. A few years ago in the Captain America comic, they did a thing where he got pushed into some alternate dimension. And as they often have it in comics, he had to live out his life. He was in this bizarre pocket dimension and then lived for 50, 60 years before then being returned to our dimension. But then while he was in this pocket dimension, he had a son, and you think, okay, American names and what have you. And he called him Ian, which I always found so weird. And at one point he went, Ian! Shouted his house I don't know why. I just found it so strange. It's this is the most American of names.
I find
Ian.
Yes. We used to watch the Teen Wolf TV series for a bit, didn't we, Beck? And there was fuck. What was the name of the the really cool werewolf guy? Which it was
Daffid.
No, it was it was a name in this country.
It was bad, wasn't it? Oh, I can finally Spencer. Look that up. I'm gonna look that up.
Do you know what I mean? One of the actors was called Spencer.
It was but wasn't it Bernard in Lost?
Yeah, Bernard.
I know they were saying Bernard.
Yeah.
Sorry, that is Bernard.
Oh god, it was a name. I'm gonna have to look it up now.
Derek. I've remembered it. It's Derek.
Derek.
It was Derek. It was brilliant. And we were like, "What the f? That's not good."
You can't swear on this. Yeah.
Thanks. Yeah,
that was a good series. Almost named our first child after one of the actresses in Teen Wolf TV series.
Is true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's true. Now, but also before we get into this and them all kind of meeting up and what have you, did you find as parents, and especially as parents, did this hit you differently watching this film?
I don't know. It felt to me, because this is the first example of the girl who, how old do you reckon Ida was, Beck?
Nine.
Mm-hmm. Because it says on the screen in front of us that she's nine, doesn't it? That's what
They said it in the film. Yeah. Because I remember thinking she, Rowan would just hulk over her. Our daughter Rowan is 10, 10. And I'm thinking, oh, she's quite small for nine, but I think because Rowan is not small, I think I've just got that a bit skewed. But yeah, that's how I noticed it.
Yeah, it made me think about, when I was her age, I was just wandering around all over the place for the whole day, not knowing where I am. But the idea of my children doing being out and doing that. This kind of stuff was like so weird and terrifying to me. But it made me feel like, am I keeping them in too much? Should they be allowed to be wandering around the parks and the woods and stuff around here? Or you know, are they going to end up getting up to all this kind of shit? You know, because it made me think, there's so many stories I've got about horrible, dangerous stuff which I was getting up to when I was wandering around the woods and stuff. But maybe you're meant to be doing that kind
breaking of thing. Into abandoned buildings.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Opening portals to hell.
Yeah.
Or the usual japes.
Yeah, we've all been there.
Yeah.
Exactly. I think there were some practicalities to their situation that popped into my mind. So, you know, sometimes in films, and this didn't happen that often, to be fair, which is a sign of a good film, but something sort of jolt you out of the story, don't they? And it can be maybe if the physics in the made-up universe that you're watching doesn't quite work, or whatever. In this particular instance, I kept thinking, what is the situation with the autistic girl and going to the toilet?
All right, yeah.
And I thought it several times when they were outside of the flat. I'm like, what is she able to tell you when she needs the toilet? What's going on? Because she seems like what she's got kind of going on in terms of neurodivergence is possibly too much for a 9-year-old to manage. I don't know. And there certainly wasn't a bond there between those two, especially at the beginning of the film. So I felt like, as a parent, I think you might not have seen the pinching, but would you have really have caught on that your 9-year-old was not mad impressed with, you know, your sister's needs or whatever?
Especially, like, you know, that they are living quite high up. So, and you see them going up and down these terrifying stairs, which, you know, shit me up just like watching it. Yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, maybe that's a little bit unrealistic, but yeah, I don't know. I'm just trying to think. Because our oldest daughter says she wants to go to the park around the corner for us on her own. And I said, you can't go on your own, but you can go with a friend. But she's got, none of her friends would be allowed to go and do it. No, so it's just, yeah.
Yeah, and also Rowan does not have street smarts, whatever that looks like. Rowan's daft. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Yeah, so they meet Ben.
He's a hilariously sinister kid. Can we say that?
Yeah.
I mean, I know he's acting, but he was brilliantly sinister. He was
from the outset, though. I felt sorry for him to start off with.
Yeah. Really? And did you think so?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
interesting. I felt sorry for him, but I still thought he looked creepy.
Okay. But that's what I thought was good. Was that, again, kind of like wrong foot me on this film, was that when they met, it was done in, you know, using the kind of the normal cinema language of, here are two people that are outsiders becoming friends, and they're going to, you know, we're now going to see their friendship flourish or grow. And then suddenly, when it takes that much darker turn, I was like, whoa, okay, right, okay, well, this is weird. Because I was going to say this film, I'm already, you know, no spoilers here, I thought it was great. But one of the things was, I genuinely went,
yeah.
out loud watching it, which out of all the horror things that we've watched, that's the first time watching it here on my own that I genuinely kind of gasped in horror at one bit.
Yeah. So I think I kind of guess which bit it is when we get to it.
Yeah.
So Ben takes her off to his treehouse he's built, and they're just playing around in this treehouse. He's talking about he's come from somewhere else where he had a treehouse and he's had to move here. And it's the start of the kind of like, and again, nothing, you have a lot of this film, you have to read between the lines. It's nothing sort of, but you kind of feel like he's got a bit of a shitty background.
Yes.
Later on, you see his top off and he's got bruises on him, which was interesting.
He's got bruises in different places, hasn't he?
Yeah.
Throughout. And that's good because it's never mentioned. We never see that explicitly talked about, but you can infer what's going on.
And his mum sleeps at weird hours, doesn't she?
Yeah.
She's a lot of the when kids, he comes in.
Yeah, exactly.
She's asleep.
But he, just so they're playing, and he just goes, oh, I got something cool to show you. And he kneels down, he said, drop this stone in front of me. And she drops it, and he goes, oh, it's too heavy. So it's a tiny little pebble. So that's too heavy. Then he picks
it's a big rock to start off with, and he says, that's too heavy.
Oh, right.
And then she gets a pebble.
Pebble and drop. Yeah, and that doesn't work either. So she has to get like a bottle top. And as she drops it in front of him, it just swerves off to one side. So it's he's obviously got some kind of telekinetic powers, which, but they're not very big. You know, it's just a tiny little thing he can do. And the kid is just like, oh, that's cool. Look, I got double jointed arms. And I love that little thing. Like,
oh, yeah. That was really cute. And her reaction was very cute and felt really real. Like when she laughed and she sort of said that was good. And then he sort of did the same thing. And that was cute. It was like, oh, telekinesis versus bending arms.
Yeah.
Still good.
But yeah, they did make a big thing out of it. And I don't know. It kind of felt real, but at the same time, I don't know. But like, kids that age,
their reactions were very real, and you know, the whole kind of "let me show you what I can do." That was all kind of like how kids are, and things that, you know, that needs to be seen, and that needs to say, "Look at me, I'm special or different in some way."
But they didn't make a big deal out of it in the film, so there wasn't like a big build of music and stuff.
No. Exactly. That's what I mean. It felt very real.
Yeah, and it's interesting watching the trailer. Some of the same scenes you see here, which they really underplay in the film. They've added all this like bombastic music and stuff to it as well to try and make it more like exciting, I think, to get people in to go and watch it. Whereas this, it was almost like, this is just a thing that happens. And then they don't go back to superpowers for ages. You know, that was kind of that just as this happens. Ida goes home, and there's another bit of nastiness here, isn't there?
And again, kind of moving on from that, her initial pinching of her sister, we see that she puts the broken glass into her sister's shoe. And it's that combination of her wanting to hurt her, I think, but yeah, also at the same time wanting to push the boundaries. And in the same way, like Becca was saying, like, oh, you know, I'm going to pinch it. Did my parents see that? I think she wants to see, like, can I get away with this?
Yeah, and what will happen if I do this?
Do this, yeah, exactly, which again feels very real.
Mm. Because what would I do if I did this? I can remember... We used to have a gas fire in our house, and that broke down. And we borrowed a fire which had. Do you remember? Like, and it's really weird. Like, both the gas fire and this electric fire both had like weird plastic things of cult
logs.
Yeah, to make it
the, logs
like
yeah, yeah,
a really, really, really fake looking open fire.
Yeah,
with like a. Remember, like they had light bulbs in there with like little
with a wheel.
Wheel, which the heat of the light bulb would make it have a flickering effect.
Yeah.
So bizarrely, shittily, like, faux. But why even bother? But this...
They'll be back in style as kitsch.
Yeah,
Sooner rather than later, Ross. You won't see.
So strange. But this electric fire had, like, filament bars, which would get really hot, or go red, and then they would, like, heat up the room. And I can remember thinking, I wonder what would happen if I touched that.
Yeah.
And I waited till my mum was bathing my brother. And this I must have been 7 or younger because I'm pretty sure it was in the house which we were in there. But I purposely waited for her to be out of the way. And I tried to reach through the bars to touch these fucking things, which are obviously so hot, but I couldn't reach my fingers. So I got a rolled up newspaper and I shoved it through and touched on there.
Good science.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Obviously set on fire, and then I'm waving like this, like fire around. Dropped it on the carpet, and then the carpet set on fire. And
no,
and I'm just screaming for my mum at this point, and she comes down and like stamps out the fire on the carpet, and we had to buy a mat to go over like the melted hole which I put on there. But just shows the stupidity of kids of like what will happen if I do this. You know,
Mom, I've fallen victim to human curiosity.
Yeah, this mental, but yeah, it's one of those things you think back and like, I could have ended up like hideously scarred, or no fingers, you know, So, and this is where we meet another child. This is a girl called Aisha, who is another a brilliant little actress. But while this Anna is walking around with glass in a shoe, not able to tell anyone that is in there and just acting as normal. This girl, Aisha, who's in another apartment in the building, suddenly feel the pain in her feet. So there's some kind of like thing going on there as well, that she's got some kind of like Dana Troy empathy sort of like power going on, where she can pick up pain of someone else in the building, which is quite
and good. There's a flash, isn't it? We as the audience see a blood-soaked sock on Aisha. Which is a nice little, I mean, I think we'd kind of got it, but it was quite a nice touch, I thought, that it was there and then it wasn't there. It made you realise exactly what it was that she was feeling. So, that was a clever bit of storytelling, I thought.
Yeah, so Aisha's got a cat and the cat goes missing. And then she's off looking for her cat and she gets into the building. And there's a point where she's sort of drawn to this apartment door, and also Anna, the autistic girl, is on the other side, and they both touch the door handle at the same time from either side of the door, and they've obviously got some kind of connection. And that, again.
Every day is filled with opportunities to express yourself. And with an everyday piece from Blue Nile, you can do it without saying a word. Blue Nile's collection of diamond jewelry is the ultimate statement, with sparkle that elevates any outfit. Or switch things up with a sapphire piece sure to spark conversation. Either way, their diamond guarantee ensures you get the highest quality at the best price. Express yourself with Blue Nile, the original online jeweler, at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself
and for those facing homelessness,
because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
But guess he finds
and this
the cat.
Is what then led to me thinking, Jesus, this is, I didn't know, this film is officially going places where I wasn't expecting. Mm. But also, genuinely, mm-hmm. two of the most traumatic things I think I've ever seen on film.
Yeah, it's horrible.
Yeah, for real.
I watched this through my fingers.
The pinching was a bold start. This was a very bold move, I thought. And horrible, which is a stupid thing to say, really, considering it's a horror film. But that's a really particular type of horror. And it is horror, isn't it? And
it is.
You know, the fact that it's everybody, you know, on this podcast has responded to it. I mean, it was. Mm. I mean, by that was the point I stopped taking notes, because all I think I wrote on notes was the cat's head.
Oh,
and then I was like, and that was it.
Oh, we got to it. So we should maybe explain what happened to the cat then, Beck. Mm-hmm. So Ben finds the cat and he names it Jabba.
Jabba.
Yeah.
Jabba.
Yeah, and takes it for his own, and he shows Ida the cat. But what do they decide to do with the cat then?
Well, first of all, they decide, don't they, to see, to test, even though they don't, again, they don't verbalize this. They decide to test the thing that a cat dropped from any height will always land on its feet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it suddenly cuts to them going up the stairwell of the flats, and they're going, no, go higher. And I thought, nothing more of it until the moment it literally just put the cat over the stairwell. I was like, Jesus, no! And I was like, oh, God, no. And they drop the cat.
Mm.
And it survives, but its leg is clearly broken.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of slinks away. They go and chase after it. They then sort of track it down in the kind of the storage area of the flats.
Mm.
And he puts his foot over its head.
Yeah, with
its head. And again, I went, oh! Like, if you like cats at all in any way, shape, or form, like, for example, Kirsty, my partner, her cat, or one of her cats really likes me, and I really love this cat.
Aww.
And it's, oh my
That's
God.
That's the first
oh
time I've heard you say you love anything.
Well,
James.
There you have it. Right. Okay. Well, look, I'm going to send you guys a picture, and you know, can cut this bit out of the degree of cat love.
Oh God.
For you.
This is illegal. Hold cat on. Love.
No, you silly sons. Hold on a second. Where's my Jake folder?
Oh,
I have me and the cat. Bless. Right, hold on. 82. Look, he came and got the car with me.
Oh,
look, you can see.
Take him home.
Oh, look. Oh, he's your friend.
Oh,
he
always is. Little, isn't he?
Oh, he's lovely. It's like the way I think he's talking to me. Because like when I go down in the mornings and stuff, I'll go, hey, morning, Jake. And he'll go, meow.
Yeah.
At me. I'm like, oh, here you go. That's a better one.
You're going soft in your old age.
I am going really soft in my old age. I absolutely can see. But you can see why. Like when they snuck, there you go. That's the other nice one.
Look. Oh, he's a look. Yeah, so, I like it.
Oh, so
look,
cute.
Look, and I don't do anything. He just comes and lays on me like that. He just really likes me, and I like him.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's so nice. And it's like, oh, it's so like, so the moment so this horrible thing. If you love a cat, or if you've got any kind of any humanity or anything like that, it's just, oh Christ, no! It's like, don't do that. And then the girl who runs the game, remind me, who is she?
Ida.
Ada.
No, you're
goes,
right. Ida.
Ida, even she goes, no, don't do that.
Yeah. And he basically uses his heel, just crushes its skull.
Crushes yeah. the cat's skull.
Oh, my god!
Which, again, you don't see it, but as with all good horror, the Foley, the sound effect, just was absolutely terrifying and horrible. And it's like, and in that moment, again, how well they've done it without the, as you were saying, without the bombastic use of sound and things such as that, it was like, Christ, this has taken a turn. And then I'm thinking, my God, well, even though she's gone, oh no, don't do it, they're both pretty bad. And then that's what got me thinking once again, the James Bulger thing. I was like, oh my God, is the story going to be that they kind of egg each other on and there's going to be this kind of, and so I thought, oh, this is great, because this is normally with a film you're like, well, I can see where this is going. And within the first 15, 20 minutes, you know, especially with like big blockbusters and things such as that, you can always tell where it's going to end. Whereas with this, I thought, I don't know what is going on.
I've several times, and when it soups up a bit late, I kept saying to Beck, I don't know if I verbalise this. Often in our relationship, I say to Beck, I've said that to you. No, you haven't. I said, oh, no, I thought it. But I kept thinking, how are they going to end this? Because there wasn't like so many, like you said, so many films, you're like, oh, I know what's going to happen here. It's going to be one of three endings at this point. And I'm going, how is this going to end? How are you going to end this? Yeah. So she leaves him. And what we forgot to say is that at this point, she's actually been outside with her autistic sister. And then they just
leave her
on a swing. Because they say, oh, she'll sit there for ages. And they go on off to torture a cat, leaving this poor girl. Like,
yeah, I mean they are stacking up the acts of like little acts of cruelty, aren't they?
Yeah.
Escalating. She's pinched her. They've left the sister just alone on her own and unattended. Then they've dropped this cat down the stairwell. There was an interesting little bit where Ben has tears because he thinks the cat is dead. And then the cat gets up and starts moving. And you kind of think, oh, maybe there's some regret there. And that's obviously just before he goes on to crush the cat's head.
Yeah.
And with his heel.
And I was thinking, then you feel like, well, maybe is that like his, I don't know, it's very ambiguous because it's like, is he doing it to put it out of his misery? Or is he just doing it again to see what would happen? And he sort of, when she leaves him, he's touching her, going, come and touch him, he's still warm. And it's just like that weird kind of like fascination of like, again, that childhood kind of curiosity untamed, isn't it? Like, oh, I've just crushed its skull, but it's still warm if I touch it.
How interesting.
No kind of morality there. So she goes back and then she finds that her sister has been befriended by this little girl, Aisha. And you can see that they seem to be understanding each other. And because Anna, the autistic girl, even if you like touch her, she would like just move away, but like act as if you're not there. But they are actively playing with each other. And when her sister wants her to leave with her, she won't leave. And until like Aisha sort of, I can't remember if she holds her hand or something, but she sort of leads her away. And it's like somehow these two have got a bond, and she's managed to get through to her where no other kids have.
And slowly as well, again, we'll come back. We also learned, don't we, that the more time she spends with her, her language starts coming back.
Exactly.
We hear during a meeting, during the, you know, when we go with the parents to the doctor's office in sort of like the establishing part of the film, or that they say she used to be able to speak, but then she lost her language really, really quickly.
Yes, which is and really terrifying, isn't it? Like 4 years old, that you could suddenly, your child would just like switch off.
Off like that.
And I can remember hearing about that and being terrified of that happening to our kids, because I heard that they can be developing completely normally and then suddenly it would just go away. And I think you just get over the fear of cop death, and then suddenly this other fucking fear comes in. This is going to happen.
As I said, I felt that for you guys as parents, this whole film must have just had like a whole other strata from it.
But also, you can see that meanness in kids when you're around them.
Oh, God, yeah.
They can be little dicks.
Tell me about it.
James being a teacher as well, you know.
Older kids, but yeah, you're right. That kind of, and that's what kind of one of the interesting things in this film is that whole kind of the developing of empathy. And it's one of the things that I spend a lot of time doing with teenage boys. Is trying to get them to say, imagine how that feels for that person. Imagine what you've just done there. And, you know, how do you think that makes that person feel? Because you realize it's not the fault of a parent or anything like that. Please don't, you know, no one send me angry emails. It's got nothing. I'm not criticizing anyone's parenting. I just think it's genuinely like quite a male thing and quite a teenage boy thing that you don't think about anybody else other than yourself. You struggle too. It's just that, I'm learning and kind of making my way in the world, but I haven't quite mastered that thing yet of, wait, there's other people other than me. And it's not just all about me being first and I must get there ahead of that, and telling them to just stop touching each other all the bloody time. That's the other thing I've... why are you touching him? Why are you holding on to him right now?
I don't know.
Yeah. Just let go of him. You don't need to touch him right now. Literally every 15 minutes without fail. Anyway,
no,
a terrifying glimpse into my day there.
A friend of mine was telling me about saying that the part at the front of their brain, the logic part of their brain, just stops developing for a bit, so let everything else develop.
Catch up. Yeah.
And then that doesn't come until like they're in their like late teens, early 20s. And your actual logic side of things kicks back in again. And that's why it's really, you can't talk to kids in a logical way. They're like, huh? You know, just can't get it. So back at the film, the group of kids, they all get together and they realize that the powers they've got, like the empathy and the mind reading and the ability to move things, are stronger when they're all together.
Together.
Mm-hmm. And they're almost like they're feeding off of each other, which is a really cool idea. I love that. But you also realize that our main character hasn't got any powers. She can't do any of this stuff. But they start like experimenting, like the boy can move bigger rocks and stuff. And they realize that they can use Anna as almost like a psychic telephone, that they can, like, if someone whispers something into her ear, the other girl can hear it, and they start like experimenting it and getting it further and further. They try to see, and they try and do it with Ben.
Yeah.
Sorry. They tried to do it with Ben. Yeah. And he said, I can hear. realize that he can hear something, but he can't quite do it. But his psychic abilities are starting to grow as well. And they just they go back to the stairwell and see if they can like send messages from further apart, and then they end up going to the woods, and they're doing it.
I'm amazed it takes them as long to say rude words as it does.
Yes. but that is what changes the whole thing, isn't it? Because they call Ben. What do they call him?
I can't remember. A turd. A joyous phrase.
Yes.
Ben is a turd.
So that is the message they send across to each other. And they all laugh, but then... Does he throw a rock at what? Then he uses his power to knock the girl over, doesn't he?
He moves her, doesn't he? Yes, he moves her up. He knocks her over.
Because he's got that anger, them laughing at him. He uses his power and knocks the girl over, Aisha. the Ada goes to confront him. He chucks rocks at her with his mind, but just doesn't hit her. And then she pushes him over, and then he gets scared because Anna, who's like completely oblivious to everything happens, suddenly comes to defend her friends, and he gets scared and runs off. And it was really this is where the tree explodes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
So oh gosh, yeah.
You have and they end up having a confrontation. It's almost something like Magneto or something, isn't it? They're both staring mm-hmm. at each other.
Mm.
And you can just see like the gravel on the floor just sort of starting to move and stuff, and something's happening.
Again, what was nice was that the use of special effects, it was very subtle and very small, but yeah. really definitely. Effective.
Yeah, mm. And you're thinking, what's going to happen here? And they're both basically facing
butting
off.
Heads against yeah. each other. Yeah,
and a tree explodes near them, and it's just like that's amazing, that power. And that kind of breaks the tension, but then you realise that a big shard of wood is embedded itself into the autistic girl's leg.
Mm. Which again, even though, again, you know, you see horror films where people get limbs cut off and things such as that, there was something so realistic about it and how deep the bit of wood was like,
Yes, absolutely. I mean, they really went for some visceral effects.
They did.
The cat head and the big splinter. I mean, a bit more than a splinter, I guess.
Yeah.
They were really, you could really feel them. And I think, like, we've all crushed things under our foot. It made me think of, like, a snail shell, you know?
Yes.
You accidentally tread on a snail and you're like, that is minging.
Yeah.
I think those are things that you could really feel them. Like, you would know, not that you would crush a cat, I don't mean that, but you could kind of extrapolate that out a bit, couldn't you, as to what that might feel like. And similarly, we've all had splinters that are horrible, and to have a big shard of wood go into your leg, you can imagine what that would feel like.
Mm.
Much more than maybe having your leg cut off with a chainsaw.
Yes. And the kids start touching it, don't they?
Mm.
And she's going, well, she can't feel it. And then the Aisha, the sort of psychic one, she goes, she can.
She can.
She can. When you pinch her, she's crying inside. And that was, again, a horrible sort of realization for the sister, that she thought she was just pinching her and hurting her, but she's actually is crying inside.
And there are ramifications. And again, it's that whole kind of that developing of empathy and realizing, oh shit, wait, you know.
I've got two splinter stories, one which I read online. one of my dad's favorite stories to tell us about him growing up is him and his brother made a makeshift slide in the garden with an old plank. So they were just going out and sliding down the plank. And his brother slid down it, got caught on a bit of the wood, and had a splinter which went from his ankle up to the middle of his groin. Just went right under the skin. And then he got up and with the pain, and as he broke, it just broke it. So like hundreds of little splinters all up his leg. And when his dad came home, his dad got a razor and shaved the skin off, and then picked up all the splinters out from the inside of his inner leg.
I've never heard this story.
It just gets worse and worse.
Where did you find this out?
Well, it's just like a recurring story. My dad.
Have you ever heard this before, James?
No.
Why have you sat on that for so long?
It's just horrible.
It's dreadful. I feel like I'm going to think about that.
That's what I say. I'm not going to sleep tonight.
Someone else. This is. I'll come to the other splinter stories. But someone at work. This is why I get so stress about our kids slamming doors. Someone at work said that when he was younger, him and his sister were playing with slamming doors and stuff, and he pushed the door back on his sister, and his sister's toes got trapped underneath the door. And they couldn't move it, and his dad just pushed it really hard, and it pulled the two of her toes off.
Well, this has been officially the most horrendous proper use of the word horror, you know, kind of witch finders we've done, Ross. This is horrendous.
So
this is horrific.
It's
going to need a content warning on this, Ross.
Yeah.
Content warning. Injury
it really
detail.
It is.
Injury detail.
But imagine pulling your children's toes off.
No, thanks.
The sort of thing I can imagine myself doing and being guilty forever. Yeah. The other one was I read on Twitter. They were saying, has anyone got a story which you say which sounds like an urban legend, which is actually true? And someone said we were doing things where he was running and belly sliding across the stage at school. And then someone did and got a splinter just go right up inside. And they had to go up inside their body off the thing, and then they had to get an ambulance to come in. Take the kid off.
I cannot cope with it. It's just horrible. Mm. It's just horrible.
Has any bad injuries happened at your school whilst you've been there, James?
No. Very, very pleased to say, apart, you know, just a number of rugby-based injuries, as you often get with schools. Hmm. The only thing, again, you might want to cut this bit out, but I've started watching a really amazing YouTube channel from this woman. I got her book called Caitlin Doherty, and her YouTube channel is Ask a... what's it called? Hang on.
Okay.
Ask a Mortician.
Oh, okay.
So she does lots
Beck's
of stuff.
Eyes lit up then.
Oh, Beck, check her out. She's brilliant. Look it up. Her stuff is fantastic. She's really interesting. And that she looks
really?
At like some... Yes. Like she talks about like the process of death burials and things such as that. And looks at some famous deaths and things such as that. And like,
wow.
Yeah. Really, really good. And she was on one of her things. She on one of the videos on her channel. She was doing a talk with somebody, and they said, well, "What's the most horrific death you've ever heard of?" And she said that two guys got into a fight over a woman outside of a bar, and in the process of the fight, the guy fell down an open manhole cover, and when he dropped to the bottom, the pipes in some way, shape, or form broke, so he was just being covered in boiling water constantly, and he was trapped down there. And they called an ambulance, and they said by the time the fire crews and the ambulance got there, he was still alive.
My God!
And they could just hear him kind of sort of screaming out in agony as the water continued to boil
him alive.
Yeah. And when they got him up, he was then dead, and they took his temperature, and they said that his registered death temperature was 120 degrees. And they said, that's not what his actual temperature was. That's as high as the thermometer would go.
Ugh.
They said he was literally cooked alive.
Oh my God.
I know.
That is so bad.
There you go. So that's not one, but that just with me, you know, you just like, ooh.
Oh, and imagine,
that's
right?
That's a horrible way to go.
People who didn't know you died, but maybe in the surrounding area, were like sniffing you up, like you were.
Yeah.
Like, oh, is there a hot dog cart near
here?
Yeah. Like,
yeah,
is
yeah,
something's
yeah,
being
yeah.
broiled? What, like, that smells great.
Yeah, yeah, people get hungry.
God.
Yeah.
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 Oh, that is the worst.
But
oh,
anyway, yes, I highly recommend her YouTube channel.
Oh,
she's great.
Okay. Yeah, that feels like a real rabbit hole to fall down.
It is.
So good recommendation.
Rather than
it
a
is.
Manhole.
Like the one that I watched, I thought, oh, God, that's fascinating. She did a thing saying she looked into the argument over who had Charles Manson's body when he died, because loads of people tried to claim it.
Yeah.
And so she's like, right, what's the law when it comes to someone saying, I want that body?
Mm-hmm.
If you're dead and you're a notorious murderer. It was really fascinating. Honestly, it's like, whoa,
nice.
I never. And anyway, back to the film.
Cool.
The film.
Back at the flats, they're doing more. The kids are all in different things, and the little sister whispers into her sister's ear, shark.
Mm.
And then you see one of the kids draws a picture of a shark in the steam on the window. Another one draws it in the dust floor, and then. When no one's looking, the autistic girl draws a picture of a shark and a little sort of like extra sketch sort of thing as well. Mm-hmm. So like, you know, this is all, they're all joined up. This is all going on. And then you also realize Anna has got a habit of spinning pot lids to make it go digga 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 digga.
Yeah.
And then no people are just walking around and you realize that she's making that. So it's almost like the spinning top in Inception. She's making it so it never stops. It's getting to the point where it should stop, and then it just speeds up again. So she's developing some sort of power. But it's just interesting that no one's noticing her. But
that's right. That's a nice touch, wasn't it? The dad's just walking right next to her, just not paying any attention to what she's doing.
Yeah,
yeah.
We cut to Ben's homeline. This is the first time we actually see his mum, and she's just on the phone, and I think she was on Tinder or something. She kept like swiping one direction on the thing, and she's cooking in a massive, completely over the top pot of boiling water hot dogs.
Well, we had seen her before, but she said she was asleep.
Oh, okay.
He comes home and she's asleep.
Yeah, yeah.
So during the day, thus suggesting that she's keeping unusual hours or, yeah, you know, something's afoot.
So,
but you're right.
So he's watching. What happens to make him? Is it because he's drawing the shark or something?
He just wants to do it, doesn't he? It's just, once again, it's that curiosity thing, isn't it? He wants to see how, you know, can he move that pot?
Mm. Oh yeah, he moves it. Yeah, and then she's like, gets a bit shitty at him. And then he uses his mind to fire a pan at her, knocks her on the head, and she falls to the ground. In Aisha's house, Aisha's mum's head starts bleeding. Well, it appears,
which was really well done.
Yes,
how they did that, and the actress was brilliant in not responding to any of the blood coming down her face.
And the little girl's going, "Mummy, your head's bleeding." Yeah, she's like, "No, I'm not." Ben's mum is laying on the floor, unconscious. So then he decides to use his mind to pour boiling water all over her, which was, again, another sort of like, watch for your fingers. I know what's going to happen here. But she doesn't come round from this point. And then he just goes off and makes himself something to eat, doesn't he? And then comes back, you know, tries to sort of like... And she's, by this point, she's got these huge yellow blisters all over her.
And he
tries to mop them up. But yeah, it's... Again, this guy is dangerous.
Yeah, they definitely have their paths. Him and Ida, they might have had some buddy torture earlier on in the film, but they've clearly diverged in terms of paths by this point, haven't they?
Yeah, and this made me think of Nielsen, isn't it?
Dennis Nielsen.
Dennis Nielsen, because he used to kill people and just leave them in his flat, didn't he? So at this point, we know. The mum comes round and starts screaming for him to call for a doctor.
Understandably.
Yeah. And he just leaves her. Does he kill her? I can't remember.
I don't think so. Not that we see, he doesn't leave. He doesn't even react, does he? He just sort of.
Yeah. So we know at this point he's got a blistered, encrusted, boiled, half alive mum just left to die and left in his flat. And he's living there. For like several days afterwards. So he meets up with the kids again, and he tells Ada that he can control people with his mind. He calls it fetching.
His power has developed.
Yeah, and this made me think of Stephen King, because it felt very Stephen King, and the kids, like the way they got the Shining. He having names for these powers, and he's got this. He calls it fetching people. And she goes, "Oh, do it to me." And he can make her. He basically makes her move up onto the top of this old fridge.
Which, again, as a child of the 80s, we were constantly being told, never go anywhere near an abandoned fridge.
Yeah, I thought he was
going to get trapped. And I thought, oh my God, he's going to trap her inside the abandoned
fridge. Yeah, that's what I thought. Yeah, it's going to happen. Yeah.
But she was holding a stick at the time and she threw it down. And she said, "I thought I was holding a snake."
Yeah,
and he managed to make her have a worse fear, to make her drop the stick.
No, didn't he say to her, "That wasn't me"?
Oh,
I think that was the first time we saw her have a flash of her power. I thought, am I wrong in that? I think he said, "No, that wasn't me. I didn't do that. Like, I made you move, but I didn't do that."
But then he gets her to hold the stick out, and he basically explodes the stick, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
At which point they go off to find some kids playing football.
And one of them had bullied him.
Yeah.
And so it's like, right, now I'm going to get the bully.
And he basically explodes his leg, but from a great distance. Again, this is like...
Oh, no. Hold on. I'm getting mixed, even though I only saw it earlier today.
No. So there's two kids. There's kids playing football in the distance, and he breaks their legs.
Makes him fall over in air.
Yeah. But there's another kid who's been bullying him. He goes home and uses his fetch powers on
basically a middle-aged loser like me.
But we thought, this is confusing, because we thought, is that his dad? Because there's a bit where you see the mum.
Yes.
Yeah. That's confusing.
I do know what you mean. I thought that, but no, I just think it's just a guy, isn't it, in the flats on his own.
Yeah.
You can tell it's a guy living on his own because he hasn't done the washing up.
Exactly.
He's just left the washing up pile in a classic. Man on his own. So essentially, which I was trying to avoid.
He controls this guy to go and stove this boy's head in with a with a rock. Again, you don't see it happen, but it's pretty scary. Yeah.
And then by that point, they then really start to worry about him, don't they? And it's that thing of, oh, you know, we've got to try and stop him. And they confront him.
And he starts to, like, it does like the Darth Vader kind of pinch sort of thing, doesn't he? To stop the little girl breathing.
Well, yeah, hold on, it was a Darth Vader pinch.
Yes, he does that on Aisha. And then Anna, the autistic sister, runs up and stops him doing it, doesn't she?
Yeah, she literally exits the flat, doesn't she? Is that right?
Yeah.
She just, she comes,
They've got to stop him. They realize that he's gone out of control and that they've
and
got
also
to stop
he can
him.
Control, and he can control other people.
Yeah.
So there's points that where you I walk towards the flat and you see this man just pegging it for miles away.
Yeah.
Just running and then... Just as they get through the door, he's desperately trying to get through the door. And you think, is this someone he's controlling?
Yes.
Or
I felt that he was. And that was
And then the mum is like using a knife and then suddenly looks as if like she might be controlled by him. So Ada goes and locks herself into the bathroom. But then the mum is just like, I've got to pop out. So
No, that's what I was about to say. That's then the big thing that happens is he then takes over Aisha's mother and you see what Aisha's mother sees and it's like it's quite terrifying.
It's very strange. You see it for a very short period of time. It's just like a wild sort of creature holding a dead rabbit, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So obviously, you're like sort of preying on her fears in some way, shape or form. And then, she obviously then stabs poor old Aisha in the back.
Which is... I think that was quite a powerful.
No, God, it's terrifying because she was such a good actress and such a a character that you were that you feel for. So it was like,
And then the mum immediately comes around and realizes that
she's what she's done. But that was also the point, though, that you would start to go, what the fuck's going on in that block of flats? Because all of a sudden there's this one teenage boy who's just been had his head stoved in by some guy who's clearly just now confused as to what's happened. This poor girl's just been stabbed to death. This other kid's just fallen over and his leg is, you know, you would start to go, now, you know, it's not good to draw connections without evidence sometimes, but there's something funny going on here, isn't there? You know,
exactly,
kind of. Everyone seems to sort of take it in their stride, with the exception of the kind of like the little memorial for Aisha. Everyone is just like, fine, which is like one of my mild criticisms of it. I didn't think there was enough of people going, what the fuck's going on?
Yeah, definitely. And I always imagine, like, in an ideal world, you want just to have a little flash to, you know, the police, whatever it's called, investigation room. You want to see a whiteboard where they've got, like, possibilities.
Yeah,
and then underneath that, like, query, river of slime. Query, the upside down. Someone's got to bring these things up, haven't they? And be like, is it cursed?
Yeah.
Are we cursed?
Yeah. Vampires? Question mark.
Yeah, what exactly?
No one ever suspects zombies when it's blatantly zombies.
Yeah, and they go, they find so many other words. Even though zombie is such a well-known word in the lexicon, then but nobody's going to be like, it's fucking zombies. I fucking knew it. Or vampires. That's another one that I never want to mention. 30 days and 30 nights. Is that what it's
called? That's one pure. Yeah, no.
No, that's wrong. I'm getting it wrong. Is it 40
days? 30 days of night. Yeah.
But there's, I'm getting mixed up with that horrible Harrison Ford film.
I think I'm
getting mixed up with 6 days, 7 nights, or whatever.
With Anne Hesh.
So bad with Anne Hesh.
Yeah. I thought he's getting mixed up with some kind of like sex thriller, which was like 28 weeks or something.
9.5 weeks.
Nine and a half weeks.
Mickey Rourke and Kim Bassinger.
Yeah.
Which weirdly, when I look back on it now, that was really weird. My sisters were really into as a film and had the soundtrack, which is all kind of like very heavy, sexy, sex-related
sexy
songs.
Sexy sex.
And I was well into it. And looking back on it now, I'm like, I'm not sure that was entirely all right. Like an 8-year-old boy.
That was so funny. I do that.
I was really disappointed to find out that the soundtrack itself is not on Spotify. I think I may have even looked into it, because it was that and the Footloose soundtrack, which were the two twin pillars of my childhood.
What is the one with Winnie the Pooh and Madonna?
Body of Evidence.
But yeah, that I can remember being like...
I just explained so much for at least 9.5 weeks.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
And next on Mastermind, we have James Randall. He's a teacher from Dorset. Good evening. Thank you very much. And your chosen subject tonight, Hollywood sex movies of the mid 80s and early 90s. Sits back in chair.
Oh, man.
Fire away.
I can remember, because the son would always have little steals out of these things. Mm. And I remember thinking, that's going to be so sexy watching that Madonna film. And somehow I managed to get to watch it, and I've just been really, really disturbed by Willem Dafoe, because he's just I find him a very frightening looking person. The fact of him having sex was and all the stuff with the hot wax, I was like, that is the last thing I'd want anyone doing to me. Yeah. I cannot get in. I cannot wank to this.
Oh, good grief. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. dear.
One of the things in this film, for me, was it felt unrealistic. They all seemed to be wearing the same clothes or clothes of a similar form. But I felt like it was almost superhero-esque, where they had, colours. One colour was... One person was orange, one colour was blue, one was yellow, and all that kind of stuff. And it was kind of almost in that kind of vein. But you kept seeing Ben, in the distance, in his, orange T-shirt. Mm. And, he was just, he's always there, and he's coming to get you. And then we basically get to this... the big confrontation at the end. But it was beautifully done in a not a confrontational kind of way.
Yes.
So essentially, everyone's come back from holiday. So there's people everywhere.
Suddenly, yeah.
And you've got Ben on one side of this lake, and you've got Anna on the other side of this lake. And what I loved is that they were very quietly just started to clench their fists.
Yes.
And you saw it was almost wind went across the river.
And
the children around them started
freaking out, didn't they? And it started crying. Yeah, and
children started crying and stuff. That was
We
really
should just
lovely.
Point out very quickly as well that the big thing is that Ida goes to help Anna. But she's got she's broken a leg when she's escaped, her being attacked.
Yeah, we forgot about them pushing him off of a bridge. But that happens.
But what is then remarkable is that we then learn that she does have powers, doesn't she? That she's got willpower alone. She makes her plaster cast explode off her leg.
Yeah, in order to try and save her sister, she manages to manifest some powers and stuff.
Yeah.
So it looks as if Ben is getting the upper hand in this sort of psychic battle. Quiet, silent psychic battle.
Across that small kind of lake/pond.
And then the little sister comes and holds her hand, and they kind of team up.
Yep, combine their powers.
And he just basically just sits down and dies. And it was brilliant. Yes. I loved it. I was watching it and I thought, this is better than a huge amount of superhero massive battles I've ever seen.
I agree.
It was so much more tense.
Yep.
And
how they did it with, as I said, with normal life going on around them, but just children responding to it. That whole thing, again, I think which I was going to say, and just I think probably just general summary of the film, is there is that thing about childhood. Obviously, the metaphor for this film is the learning to become an adult and dealing with adult morality and adult responsibility. But at the same time, there is always that thing, isn't there, that people believe that kids can see ghosts and that kind of when you're young, you are therefore just that much more open to things which maybe you no longer see when you're an adult. And I felt
children
that
have a whole world, don't they?
Yeah.
They have a whole world which is going along the same side as us, and they're seeing the world in a different way. And it was beautiful.
Tremendous.
Yeah.
So, and that is pretty much it, isn't it? Is that it then kind of pans back and then we...
The autistic girl's gone back to how she was before, completely unresponsive and stuff. but we don't know.
Is she? Yeah. Because Zed, as they go into the flat at the end, the mum is like, oh, look, an ambulance has just turned up outside. Obviously, people have discovered the fact that the boy's dead and what have you. But then, as we said, you know, the girl, Ida's been writing on Anna.
Anna,
yeah. The autistic sister has been kind of writing really angrily on the Etch-a-Sketch throughout. And then there's suddenly, she always then clears it and then starts angrily scribbling on it again. But then we saw that when she was kind of calmer and being controlled, her kind of squiggle, her control of the pen was suddenly more gentle and sophisticated and more lucid. Yeah. But then, you know, that's the final shot of the film, is that she resets the pad, but then you notice that her hand suddenly becomes more lucid, doesn't it? And so it's kind of like the question mark at the end of, is she now going to start being okay or not? Or, you know, what else has gone on here or is about to go on here? So I always love a film that leaves you with a bit of a, at the end. I love a, well, what next?
Thoughts.
Loved it.
Beck, what did you...
Go on, Beck first.
James loved it. Beck, what did you think of this film?
No, I agree. I agree with James. I loved it. It was unexpected in lots of ways. It was bold and unexpected. The storytelling was, I thought, gentle. It didn't bash you over the head with it. It was very clear. Crucially, I did not fall asleep. Largely for the film. That is a really good sign because we'd started watching the film at 9 o'clock, and for any listeners that are middle aged, you know that there's a chance you're going to fall asleep if it's not interesting enough. And actually, that kept me going. I was making sure that I was sitting up to watch it.
The reason we had to watch it at that point is we were going to watch it with dinner, but then when Beck realised it had subtitles, she realised she couldn't eat and read subtitles at the same time. Therefore we had to watch Sewing Bee for a bit in order to have our film.
What's that? Did I say that?
Yeah, you said, oh, I can't.
I mean, it does seem like something I would say.
Like, I can't do subtitles while I'm eating. I was like, okay, right.
Really?
Yeah. Oh.
Okay.
So, James, yes.
Oh, no, it wasn't, actually. Gosh, just disrespectful across the airwaves there. It was because I was going to write notes, and I couldn't write notes at the same time I was eating my dinner.
Oh, okay, there you go.
Oh. But to be fair, the other thing did absolutely sound like something I would do.
Yeah. And I'm the editor, so that is exactly what is going to be the reality of James, you like this?
Yeah. Just because it's that, for me, it was that thing of normally when you watch a film, you think, I know exactly what I'm going to be getting here. I did not know what was happening. And so to have the film unfold as it did with the surprises that came with it, that was so refreshing and really enjoying to see. How they handled the elements of horror and, you know, the special effects, as we said, the lack of soundtrack, the lack of bombast, tremendous, really, really enjoyed that. Thought the kids were exceptional, bearing in mind kid actors can be a bit sometimes.
And they were brilliant.
They were absolutely superb. If anything, you know, it took a little bit too long, the final confrontation. But at the same time, I would recommend that everybody watch this. This is great. And, you know, I would say if you want to watch something a bit different, and I'm with Becca, normally if I go and see something in the cinema and I've been at work during the day, I will fall asleep. I will absolutely, no matter how much I want to see it, I will have a little 5 minutes, like, you know, just a little 5 minutes out. Like when I went to see Everything Always Everywhere at Once, whatever it's called, I'd say, despite the fact that that's all, that film. I had to have just a little 5 minutes in that. And I was like, I'm back, I'm awake. But no, I was even laying on my super comfy couch. I was focused in on this 100% all the way through.
I loved it as well. I think it's maybe 15, 20 minutes too long. Yep. For me, there's two things which are in every single modern horror film. It's either a drone shot going over the top of woods, or there's a bit where they do a lot of filming upside down, and it's like, oh, look, the camera's upside down. Isn't that unnerving? It's like they did quite a bit of like moving around the blocks of flats upside down to make it feel a bit weird. And there was also a bit where, which we forgot to talk about, where she, Ada tries to kill Ben by pushing him off a bridge.
Yes.
But he survives it, and then he sort of throws her into her kind of like nightmare world, and it goes all black, all into night, and there's kind of these weird like one-legged creatures like chasing her, and it basically makes her go out into the road and almost get run over. For me, that was almost like a cheat, and it felt like the Upside Down in Stranger Things. It was almost like, I think like someone said, this isn't scary enough, you need to put another scary bit in at this point, because everything else is like real world, brightly lit, daytime. This is like, I think the supernatural is even more supernatural if it's in a real world location. You know, the idea that a piece of hot Lego can fly across the
of course,
is way more terrifying, than like a vampire for me, because it's real. And that bit for me was like, you didn't need this bit in it. You could have just shown her in the real world just being made to walk in front of the traffic, and it would have been equally scary, I think. So I'm going to give some scores. I'm going to give this, it would have been a 5 out of 5 for me, but it's just that I felt like it was a little bit too long and they added something which kind of took it away. So I'm going to give it a 4.5 out of 5, which is... Ooh. Anyone else got any scores?
4 for me. Strong, for strong 4 for me.
Yep, I'm going to agree with James. I'll give it a 4. It definitely was like I thought it was a very well-made film, and I can't fault it in many ways. For me, it's just the only bit it missed out was it's probably just not quite my taste, which I know seems like a shitty reason there's no one in a mask getting slashed.
And it wasn't in space.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Come on. I mean, it's not hard. But yeah, so it was more of a taste thing. However, I did really enjoy it. I thought it was excellent.
I know this is the second film by this filmmaker, and the other one sounds really good as well. So I want to go back and watch the first one's made. Apparently it's not a folk horror film. So we've kicked off our folk horror podcast without a folk horror film.
Yes! Subvert expectations, Ross. Subvert expectations.
Okay, so next time, on this iteration of our podcast, me and James are going to take it in turns to pick what the film
is. Oh, gosh, it's my turn.
Yeah, it's your turn to pick what.
All right, okay. I've got to do some work.
Yeah. And I did tell him, I did tell him this.
I've got a lot on. It's exam season. Go on.
So, we're probably going to intersperse these episodes, drop them in amongst the main podcast, but the next time we do a. Folk and Hell. We are going to watch.
I don't know.
You need to tell us.
I'll have a think about it tomorrow.
I think it's got to be Jason X in space.
The classic folk horror film.
No. I'll have a little look at the list tomorrow, and I'll message you. And
go do me a voicemail. And I'll pop it in.
Yeah. All right. Brilliant. All
right. Hello, everyone. James here. Sorry, I must apologise. I should have been far more organised and had a folk horror film picked out when we recorded the podcast. But unfortunately, as usual, my life is vaguely shambolic. Far too much stuff going on. Too many plates spinning at once. And basically, Ross had to kick me up the arse now in order to think of something. So our movie for next time is 2017's The Ritual. So look forward to that one next time on the podcast.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us.
Awesome.
I hope you enjoyed something slightly different from our normal episode. This is not the beginning of just this kind of stuff, but it's a little bit something different.
So it's just to give John a break while he's having to be a successful artist and photographer.
Yeah. So until we see you again.
Yes, stay safe, happy everyone. Happy day. Thanks for being on, Becca. That was awesome.
Thanks, guys.
I forgot that.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for coming on, Beck. And have you got an open Twitter?
Me?
No, Beck.
Me? No. I don't.
All right. So
you
can't even follow my wife on Twitter. There we go. Well, bye, everyone.
Nobody wants to. Bye.
Bye.
You have been listening to the General Witchfinders present Folk in Hell. A spin-off podcast. Find more episodes of this and the main show wherever you get your podcasts. Visit generalwitchfinders.com for more details. Commune with us on Twitter at generalwitch1 and help support the show on Patreon. Sleep close and
my God! Christ!
It's all very important what font the script's in.
Of course.
I spent most of my day, I said to Beck today, I just need to do the script, but I spent most of the time picking what colour orange I was going to use for the underlining. But it's
such a designer.
Yeah.
I love it.
Oh, yeah, I was about to say, graphic designer. Yeah.
Mm. Where we are now, working in the same room sometimes, right. James. Ross can see my abysmal efforts to try and like make something look nice, and I can just hear him making noises like, I'm like, look, I know it's bad, but I just need to produce it really quickly. It's really upsetting me. Like, yeah, it's awful.
She's moved her screen so I can't see it anymore.
That is a good solution. Like, well done.
That's the best way. It's the only way. It's like when you open my laptop to look for this. It's just like, why is your desktop picture? It's in portrait mode and it's not the right way around. I'm like, it's been like that ever since I've had that laptop.
So it's a picture of me and the kids, but just like laying.
I could
sideways.
Change it, but I don't care enough to do it, and I could sense you trying to. Fiddle with the settings of my laptop, and I was not.
Yeah. Well, happy about that. Do you mind if I close, every single tab you've ever opened, which is still open on this right now?
I do. I restore those tabs every time, like if it shuts down.
Yeah.
And some of those tabs have almost nostalgic value, actually.
Of course. I like that. Like sometimes I'll never be able to find this web page again.
Exactly. I have stuff like that all the time. I'm like, I better keep that because, I will never. And it's also how I remember what I was looking at. Otherwise,
I always clean the screen for it as well. You know, the years of grime and disgustingness is horrible.
I'm generally quite a clean person, but when it comes to laptops, I am Trebus level. I don't give a shit. I never clean the screen.
What's going on with your hair, Ross?
Oh, I got some new product.
Oh. You look like you're in the cast of Grease.
Yeah. I got my new jacket, Beck got me.
Very nice. Look at that. Very, very swish.
Yeah, I feel like I'm going to go nice. Beat up some nerds after this podcast.
Yes, you are. I'm sure you are.
But you are one of us.
Yeah. Yeah. That'd be a whole plot for an 80s film, wouldn't it?
It is, right there. It's good. Right, okay, I'm working. I'm here.
Nerd incognito. Awesome. Right. Right, So we just going to have to wing it because
I've done this before.
We're doing it in a different
way. It's so different.
Yeah. So.
Right.
Do you want to go?
Right. Do you want me to do my thing at the start and you do your bit?
Have you seen, it's on the script, like the new one.
I see it, yeah.
Yeah, okay.
Nice orange, yeah.
Okay, good Beck, job. And you can see your guest. All right, Beck.
Yeah. Thanks.
Well, let's do it.
Right, okay.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Ever Googled your own name? Prepare for a shock because your personal info, including addresses and phone numbers, is out there. especially with the recent hacks at some big phone and healthcare companies. But here's where Aura steps in. Aura scans the dark web for your sensitive information and sends real-time alerts. Aura also actively requests that your information be removed from data broker sites, putting you back in control. Aura provides you with a complete online safety toolkit, credit and transaction monitoring, a secure password manager, a privacy-enhancing VPN, and more. Try Aura risk-free with a 14-day trial at aura.com/safety. That's aura.com/safety. Rest easy with Aura. Visit aura.com/safety today.